we are happy to have none other than Buffalo's own Washington insider, Dave Leventhal, joining us here on March 30th to close out the month of March. Dave, good morning.
Good morning to you, Joe Beamer.
So much going on, Dave. I don't even know where to start. I mean, I just dipped my head in Saratoga Spring water, so I know I'm ready for this segment, but I'm not sure where to start. So let's start in Canada because we are a border town, and we heard some tough words from Prime Minister Carney on Thursday. But then, Dave, maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but it seems like the language tamed after the two talked to each other, President Trump and Prime Minister Carney, on Friday.
And this is often the case, and it's often the case with international partners or belligerents, if you will, and is often the case with President Trump, where he'll talk a very, very strong game about any of many issues, but yet if he gets on the phone with an international leader, and that could be the leader of Mexico or Canada or Russia or Ukraine or various other places, he'll say, "Oh, you know, things are going in a different direction. We've got everything under control. We've seen this time and time again." So it's not surprising at all that once Donald Trump gets on the phone or has a conversation directly with a premier from another country, that the tone does change. But expect, too, that the tone can change very, very quickly back again. And this is all in the midst of tariffs going forward. So the game is truly afoot.
And that's the important thing. The language might be a little tamer, but since that call, nothing's been changed on what's going to go into effect with Canada on Wednesday.
Right, both what has already gone into effect and what likely will go into effect unless something changes. And we've seen this roller coaster ride ever since Donald Trump became president again for a second term on tariffs, where, well, we're going to have a tariff, and then, no, we're not going to have a tariff, or the tariff's going to be bigger, and then it's going to be smaller, and back and forth, and back and forth. So obviously Canada wants to avoid any new tariffs as much as possible, but is telegraphing a pretty strong game as to what will happen on Canada's end if ultimately additional tariffs come to pass. I think lost in all of this is a little bit of what these tariffs actually are. I think a lot of people think, and I still talk to numerous people who are pretty attuned to politics and government, who think that if the United States slaps a tariff on Canada, that Canada is paying that tariff. That isn't the case. It's not the exporter in Canada who's paying the tariff or the Canadian government who's paying the tariff. It is the importer here in the United States who is paying that tariff, which you can also call a tax. Now, of course, it's going to hurt Canada in many ways because the prices of goods can go up, the demand can go down because of that tariff existing. But it really plays to the issue of, is the United States just hurting itself and cutting itself off at its own knees and really injuring businesses and industries here in the United States that are dependent on international trade for stuff to get built and stuff to get done and money to be made? So that is sort of the existential economic question that everyone's wrestling with now. And a lot of folks would just like to see this whole tariff discussion go away, but that's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, Dave, and Wednesday is the day, not just for additional tariffs on Canada, but a lot of the president's planned tariffs going into effect, including a 25% tariff on all cars not made in the United States and a 25% tariff on any country that imports oil from Venezuela. That will start at midnight on April 2nd.
Absolutely. And one thing that tariffs will do and that tariffs are doing right now, and we see this everywhere that the United States is attempting to put tariffs on, is that it puts the United States in the driver's seat. It makes everyone else react to what the United States is doing as opposed to them imparting their will on the United States economically. So that very much is baked into the strategy here. And whether that strategy works or not will remain to be seen until we get a little further down the line. But hey, if there's one thing, Joe, that everyone knows, it's that business does not like uncertainty. Businesses like to plan. Markets like to have certainty to a great degree. So you can expect fully that so long as we have this turbulence when it comes to tariffs, that the markets are likely to be all over the place and likely going down, stock market that is, and that commodity markets and other types of business markets are going to be in tumult. It's very difficult for businesses to plan if they don't know how much money is likely to be coming in months or even years from now to make decisions about all sorts of things, how much stuff to buy, how many people to hire, how to balance your books. So this is sort of the nature of the conversation that I'm picking up time and time again from folks who are related to business in one form or fashion, that they see this uncertainty as being a major, major problem, and also too would like for that to be lessened in a much more significant degree than it is right now.
Well, Dave, you know, there's two things I could have started off with. It was tariffs or Signal Chat, and I only did tariffs because every other Sunday show started with the Signal Chat. This is the story that will not go away, Dave. As we know, a journalist was put on a Signal. I didn't know what Signal was until the story broke. But a journalist was put on to what was a very important conversation about a bomb strike in Yemen. And the fallout continues, Dave. Where do we stand on that?
See, I thought you were going to talk about me going to the Sabres game against the Washington Capitals at 3 o'clock today. It's very exciting news here in Washington.
Yes.
Sabres. But now let's go back to Signal for a second. A lot of people are very unfamiliar with what Signal is, what it does. Why would you use it? Why would the government be using it? I can tell you this. I've used Signal myself for many years. It's an extremely useful tool. It's an app that you can just put on your phone. It has security protocols on it that go above and beyond what you would have just for normal text messages on your iPhone or your Android phone. And it has a lot of utility for having sensitive conversations with, for me, sources in most part. But it is not secured to the level that government facilities or government communications need to be secured at when you're doing things like planning military actions against rebels in other countries. And that's something that you will hear from anyone in the national security realm, or most anyone in the national security realm, that Signal is a unclassified commercial product. Anyone can use it. You can download Signal today on your phone if you want to with no problem at all. And that because it doesn't have the security protocols, heightened security protocols that you would need for military planning action of that sort, that it is definitely open for exploitation, and that people who should not have that kind of information that was being discussed in those Signal chat messages, there is a heightened possibility that these plans could be known by people who we do not want them to know about. So the bottom line is that any way you cut it, this was a major, major, major national security issue and breach of protocol that typically, if you would have conversations like that, talking about airstrikes in another country, imminent ones at that, that these conversations would be had in person in secure facilities, government facilities, somewhere here in Washington, D.C. There are places that are designed specifically to defend against bugging and spying and all the various other types of electronic information gathering that could be done by malign forces. And if you can't do that and you simply have to do it remotely, there are definitely other hardened communications programs and channels that can be used to have those conversations. Emoji-filled text messaging via Signal does not, again, bottom line, reach that level in any way, shape, or form.
But as it stands right now, Dave, no firings, no one being paying the price for this chat debacle?
Yeah, and that's really up to Donald Trump. If President Trump wants to, feels like somebody needs to take the blame for this, then he can fire somebody. But at this point, it doesn't seem like he wants to give Democrats in particular the satisfaction of having a scalp up on the wall, so to speak. And because of that, we haven't seen anyone step down, not Pete Hegseth or Mike Walls, who were really at the heart of these conversations, the defense secretary and top national security advisor, and various other people, including J.D. Vance, the vice president of the United States, who was also a participant. At no time did anyone say during this chat, well, maybe we should take this to another place. Maybe we should do this another way. And it really calls into question, regardless of whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, a conservative or a liberal, like, I don't think anyone wants war planning. Whether you define this as classified or not classified or secret or not secret, it was war planning nevertheless. And if enemies had this information just a couple of hours before bombs literally started falling in Yemen, then that would have been as big a breach of national security had enemies known about that, that we've seen potentially in recent political history here in the United States. So it should be concerning to everyone that we were not delivering our best in terms of providing secure communication channels for that type of communication.
Is anyone asking the question why Jeffrey Goldberg's number is in anyone's phone associated with the Trump administration?
Oh, everyone's asking the question. We all want to know. Everyone wants to know, including many Republicans and Democrats both. And nobody's been able to give a straight answer at this point, which is truly one of the most inexplicable reasons or one of the most inexplicable aspects of this, the reason why he was there in the first place. Now, Jeffrey Goldberg has declined to say why he thinks he might have been on that chat. I know from other journalists that they have had many conversations and direct communications with Mike Waltz, and as a result, it would not be surprising that there had been some communication between Goldberg and him at some point. And hey, people in the government talk to journalists all the time and vice versa. But for him to get on the Signal chat and nobody to notice for hours on end, and for him to leave and nobody say anything at all, is just a truly just inexplicable head scratcher here. So expect that question is not going to go away until there is some sort of a satisfactory answer beyond what has been offered up, which is that, oh, well, it was just a mistake or just a kind of a freak accident. Well, no, that's not legit. Something had to happen. There had to be some reason why he got added on there. What Goldberg has said definitively from his end is that he didn't ask to be on this. He did not himself somehow get on it by something that he did of his own action, that he just suddenly found himself on this chat with people chatting away. And he did what journalists do at that point, which is to listen and read and see what the heck was going on.
Dave, Vice President Vance was in Greenland. We've heard a lot about Greenland since President Trump's re-election. Do we call it a re-election because he sat out since President Trump's election? Anything news-making of that visit?
I think the most news-making thing wasn't the visit itself, but what Donald Trump said amid the visit, which is that he wants Greenland. He wants the United States to own Greenland, and that he is not ruling out military involvement in order to get Greenland. And that may seem like a lot of bluster and hyperbole from Donald Trump, who is, love him or leave him, is prone to doing that. But this seems to ratchet it up to another level. You have the vice president going to Greenland. You have the president saying exactly that. We've got a bit of a compounding situation here, too, because Donald Trump is calling for the United States to take over Greenland at the same time that Donald Trump continues to say how he wants Canada to become the 51st state and how he would love to take over large portions of the country of Panama to get the Panama Canal back. You add this all up and you sort of begin to ask the bigger question, which is, where is this all going? Canada, Greenland, Panama? That's most of North America, short of Mexico, right? So, are we a country that just takes what it wants with no consideration for friendships or alliances or treaties? I mean, Greenland is owned by Denmark at this point, and, no consideration for the sort of, sovereignty of these other nations. Are we imperialists? What exactly is going on here? So these are some of the questions that are being bandied about here in Washington a lot, as to what end is this going? Is it going to just stop with the rhetoric, or is there actually going to be real concrete actions that are taken to try to achieve this goal that Donald Trump has put out as an international priority for the United States at this point?
Dave, on Tuesday, there are a few special elections around the nation that have had some big time money put in by the two political parties.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, including Wisconsin, a huge race there, and a few others as well. This always happens, at least to some degree, when you have a special election or an off-year election where it's the only game in town, so everyone focuses on it, and the money that is available to be spent by either party, Democrats or Republicans, gets spent with aplomb, and so that is not shocking. But what we've seen is, for example, up in Wisconsin, Elon Musk playing a massive role there, millions upon millions of dollars being spent in this election. The Democrats are doing the same thing too, bringing huge amounts of resources. It's really a litmus test or a mark on the barometer. Who has the upper hand at this early stage in the Trump administration, and they want a victory. And Democrats, of course, who have been getting their behinds kicked in every which way that they possibly can, and there's so much infighting within the party, they are an absolute unmitigated hot mess right now politically. They're looking for any kind of win that they can get. So this would be a big one for them, at least from a moral standpoint, if not a tactical victory of great national import. It would help them in that respect. So that's why they're going so hard at this. And Republicans just want to show that, hey, look, the momentum, it's not stopping with the election in November, it is continuing, and that the American people are buying into the Trump agenda, and that they want to see it not only go forward in Washington, D.C., but all over the country. And Wisconsin, as we well know, is a swing state as you get. So getting a victory there is also that much more important, because it's not like getting a victory in, you know, true blue Massachusetts or hard red Oklahoma or something. It's definitely a place that is typically in play for both parties.
The Elise Stefanik, UN ambassador role that was withdrawn, did that send shockwaves through D.C., or was it kind of understood? How was that news taken?
Yeah, shockwaves, Joe, would be a little overstated, I think, in the sense that it is logical. It makes sense. And I think it just reveals and shows that the Democrats, they know what they've got, which is only two seats between them and getting the majority back or getting something blocked. And the Republicans know what they have too, which is exactly the same thing, which is just a hair's breadth away from them not getting done in the House guaranteed what they want, because of just a handful of seats that are in play here, and that they have a majority as a result of those couple of seats. So even losing one vote like Elise Stefanik would be potentially disastrous for Republicans and being able to put forward the Trump agenda and the Republican agenda at large. And so they're not taking any chances here, and they are not playing any games. And even if it means withdrawing that nomination for somebody like Elise Stefanik, who very much wants to be part of the administration, is probably not crazy thrilled about going back and spending more time in the House, it is very logical, just from a pure political tactics standpoint, to not give up anything that you don't have to give up in the House. And Donald Trump said it himself when the president said that, hey, there are other people who are qualified for the job of being a representative to the United Nations. There are some good people. We will find them. It didn't have to be Elise Stefanik, and it's not going to be.
Well, Dave, I hope the Sabres give you a win. They did not have a great third period yesterday, but hoping they get you a win in Washington. And I'm telling you, so I'm in for Bowerly one more day, and then I'm back Tuesday morning on my regular shift. And the one thing that will make me happy to get up at 3:30 on Tuesday is knowing I get to talk to you before you go on with Susan and Brian.
You are way too kind, and I look forward to it all the same. Thank you.